Hey guys, this is Bruce. Welcome to Convo Courses Podcast. Today, my focus is going to be on GRC, Governance, Risk, and Compliance. And my focus is helping people who are trying to get in this field or considering getting in this field, because I get a lot of questions, stuff I can answer because I've been doing this type of work for a long time. I don't profess to know everything. I'm no special talent or anything at this. I just been doing this for quite some time. So I'm just going to tell you my perspective and my experience in it. And so that you can take from it what you want to and go from there. So I'm going to start off with governance, risk, and compliance. What is it? So another name for this part of information technology is information security. Some people use that term to delineate between the technical guys in the weeds who are doing something like cybersecurity defense or cybersecurity analyst work, which is very hands-on and super technical, versus people who do more documentation and policy type stuff. So my take has always been there's so much blur between the two. There's so much overlap between those two different fields, if you want to call it that, I just say cybersecurity. And so throughout this, when I refer to cybersecurity, just know I'm talking about the bigger umbrella of cybersecurity as a whole. That includes everything, every part of cybersecurity, including the governance, risk, and compliance portion of it. So I've been doing this since on and off since 2000, year 2000. I started off in the military doing it. So most of my experience is actually in the military, the Department of Defense. But then I branched off into just other parts of the federal government and then even the private sector that I've been doing GRC type work. But that's pretty much all I've done. There's been a couple areas where I've kind of gone off the path and done a little bit of engineering for a bit, but not enough to where I would call myself a full-blown technical engineer. I just did it a little bit. I've tinkered around with software engineering, but that was on my own time. So just to give you a background of where I'm coming from. So first of all, what is GRC? So for those of you who might be in IT or kind of mess around with the idea of it, well, let me just explain what it is. So mainly what we do is we help to maintain the security posture of an organization. That's a fancy way of saying we keep the organization at a certain level of security. They have a certain level of security and we want to keep them there. Or we're helping them to get to a certain level of security. So getting and maintaining that security takes a certain level of effort. And our tasks, the tools that we use, and the skill set that takes to do this type of work is what I'm going to focus on. And what I'm trying to do is give you an idea of what this field is and what you do with it. So that's my hope, that you walk away with knowing at least what it is that the GRC is, or information security, or whatever you want to call it. What is it? So the task that we normally do, so, and this is across the board from when I was working in the private sector to different government departments. What I normally do is I'm doing coordination with other units. I'm doing mostly policy, framework, and standards type work. And I'm creating and maintaining the security policies and documentation. So there's a lot of documentation involved, a lot of meetings and stuff like that. And let me go into each one of those tasks. So coordination, let's start with that one. What do I mean by that? Coordination means setting up meetings, doing meetings with the information technology department. It might be the firewall team. It might be the management. You might have to meet with them. And sometimes even the CIOs, the directors, I have to talk to them. That coordination it includes things like setting up the meetings, coordinating the meetings on a regular basis. It's you might have to send out emails. It's a lot of doing emails and doing text messages and stuff back and forth to put everybody on the same page. That's kind of what we're doing. It's getting everybody on the same page with this. Now, this is whether you do ISO 27001 security standard, whether you do HIPAA, whether you do Sarbanes-Oxley, whether you do NIST 800. We'll talk about those in a second. But I just want to hover around and stick around the tasks right now. So coordination of this requires us to have bring everybody together, whether you're whatever, no matter the industry you're in, this is something you're going to have to do as a policy person, as a GRC type person. Another thing, a task that we do besides the meetings, and I despise meetings, but it's a part of this job. So it's just something that you have to do. You know, you just kind of get used to it and just becomes part of your genetics as you just do it over and over again. So it's a lot of speaking and things like that. So we'll get into those skill sets. Another task that you're going to have to do is use and understand policies. And that means that you have to get smart on those. You got to go read some policies. You might have to mess around with some frameworks, and it depends on your industry, the types of policies and frameworks that you do. A big one is the policies of your organization. Those policies are super important because everything that you're doing in the organization is centered around the policies that they've created. Policies meaning is this a set of rules and a set of way that they do things. And those policies are usually based off of certain standards, frameworks, or regulations that are in that industry or in that government or in that organization. So understanding those policies and then adhering and meeting all of the requirements that come from those policies, another important task that we have to do on a regular basis. But getting ourselves on task and also keeping the organization on task as well. Getting everybody in alignment. So it's important that we understand it so that we can go back and talk to the IT guys or to the firewall guys or to even to upper level management who sometimes don't either understand it or just don't know about certain policies. And it's just because there's so many of them. You would think, okay, they wrote it and they approved it. Wouldn't they know the policies? Or no, they don't. Like, nobody knows everything. And all of us are just trying to figure out how to manage this stuff within those policies and guidelines. Nobody's perfect. It's an ongoing process that all of us are trying to get on the right track to get your system to maintain that certain level of security compliance. So that's the name of the game. Another big task that we do, that's something that all of our tasks kind of branch from, is creating, maintaining policies and documentation. It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of editing. It's a lot of reading through stuff that's already made and creating and making sure that it's up to date. It's a lot of coordination to make sure that it's up to date, because I don't know everything. So sometimes I have to go back to my team and say, hey, is this right? Like, this was written a year ago. Like, I know that this is different now. We have this such and such of operating system change. But this right here, I'm not sure what this is. So I got to coordinate with them to figure out and update those documents. Some of the documents that we have to update, and aside from policies and procedures, would be implementation statements is a big one. Sometimes you might have to help with the assessment reports or the assessment plan. You might have to do many different BIA documents, business implementation, business impact documentation, disaster recovery documentation, you name it. So all those documents, we're helping to make sure that they're on, that those are on point. And a lot of times it's not us that's actually doing the documents. We are kind of the facilitators to make sure that they're done a lot of times. It's not sometimes. Sometimes, like, for example, physical security usually is done by what's called a common control provider, meaning some other part of the organization or unit is actually doing it. And we just got to make sure it's like, we're just making sure, okay, do we even have one? Number one, okay, we have one. It's done by securityguard.org. Okay, let me see what they have here. All right, this hasn't been updated in 10 years. We better make sure that it's updated. So we might get back. We might set up a meeting and say, hey, this hasn't been updated in a while. is there a way we can get this one updated? And it's like, sure, you know, we actually did update it. Here's a new copy of it. You know, we updated it just 6 months ago. Here you go. So those are kind of the tasks that, whether I'm in Department of Defense or whether I'm in whatever three-letter organization I'm in, whatever private organization I'm in, if I'm doing GRC work, those three things, coordination with other units, making sure I know and understand the policy and the organization understands the policies and interpreting the policies and stuff. And another big task is creating, maintaining the documentation. Those three don't change. Like, I'm always doing one of those three things. Now, there are some parts of our task that do kind of, they'll add certain things in there that sometimes I'm doing them depending on the job or the job description, and sometimes I'm not. And a few of those that kind of pop up on a regular basis is going to be vulnerability management, scanning, and assessments. And there's some variation of those three things that I've, sometimes I'll have to do them and sometimes I'm not. Like the current job I'm in, I don't actually do the scanning, but my last couple jobs I did. Like I had a job where I was the person running the scans. I was part of the team that would, I had enough authority to run scans and then pull them whenever I needed to. And assessments, that's, you know, at the current job I'm in, we might do a self-assessment, but it's not as big a role as my previous job where I was. That was a big, real big part of the process, is the self-assessment process where we were doing the actual documentation of the assessments and everything like that. So vulnerability management is another one. Like now at this current job I'm at where I'm doing GRC stuff, I'm doing a lot of vulnerability management. But my previous job, we had a whole team that did vulnerability management, and I would just be a part of their meetings. They would pull me into their meetings. So it just depends. Right there, those tasks are going to determine how technical you need to be. And that kind of goes into the skills. What skills do you need to have? Now, a really big one that's not really talked about with cybersecurity, a lot of IT guys do not talk about this. A lot of the influencers don't talk about it, but communication is a huge skill to have, especially in cybersecurity. There's some jobs in IT and in cybersecurity where you don't really have to be a great communicator. But I would argue that in cybersecurity, especially the GRC information security policy type side, it's a lot. You really got to be a really good communicator. That means your technical writing skills, understanding and simplifying for different audiences a technical issue that you're having. So that's one part of technical writing. Another one would be to coordinate with the people who are technical, who might understand a certain the engineering team might understand a certain weapon system or whatever you've got going on, and you got to get with them and understand it enough to write to another audience. So technical writing is important. Dealing with difficult clients. This one's big. This takes a certain level of emotional intelligence that a lot of people just don't have. They just don't have the patience to deal with different. You're dealing with different people from all walks of life. You're dealing with people who deal with stress differently. You're dealing with some people who just don't know how to communicate well. You're dealing with people who might have some emotional issues of their own. And you're having to talk to them. You're having to talk to them at every level. Your peers, you're having to talk to, and they have the same issues. Not everybody has these issues, right? Sometimes it's just cool. But sometimes you have to learn to, you've got to deal with difficult clients and peers. And that's all the way up the chain, like all the way up to C-level execs, all the way down, and even customers. Like sometimes you are front-facing and you have to deal with it. And it takes a certain level of patience to deal with that. This is not, that's why I always say, this is not for everybody. This really is not for everybody. So if you're thinking about doing this for the sake of getting that six figures, I'm telling you, it might not even be worth it for you. You might not want to do this because it can get very difficult. Now, not all the jobs I've had have been difficult, and not all of them have been where I've had to deal with difficult clients, but I would say, 8 out of 9 of the jobs I've had have had at least one or two very difficult people I had to deal with. And some of them, the worst is when they're in management. It's so hard. Anyway, they'll get in the way of work. It's just very, and you've got to find a way to get around it to make it work. And then you get yelled at because it wasn't done properly or whatever, or to their specifications or whatever it is, right? So it's dealing with customer difficult is a skill. It is definitely a skill set, part of communication skills. Working with groups. This is another one a lot of IT guys can't do. So working with in a group, like taking other people's ideas and working with them and making it work in accordance with certain requirements. That's another big one. Another one would be working, just taking, getting your group to work with another group as well. Like working in a group and having the communication skills to listen and to be patient and to put all those ideas in a pot and like take the best one and prioritize things according to the group and the requirements and stuff. That's a difficult skill. That's another difficult skill. Another skill set that I would say is very, very important, which I'd like to dive into at the end of this, is knowing certain frameworks, standards, and regulations is definitely an important skill that to have. I would argue that a lot of people who try to get into this field, a lot of times they can't get a job because they will not, for whatever reason, even after I tell them, they won't list those laws, regulations, and frameworks on their resume properly. And if you want an example of how to do this, you can download mine from my site, just compcourses.net. Go download the free resume, and there you go. It's there. And you'll see that I've named things like FSMA, things like NIST 800 Risk Management Framework. I've actually gone into some of the special publications, NIST 800-53-37. I list those things on my resume so that the recruiters and the human resources guys know this guy, he knows, not only knows it, but he's applied it in his organization. A lot of people don't even know. All of us, I don't care what industry you're in. I don't care what you have dealt with one of these frameworks or standards or laws. Because all of us, in order to make this thing work, all of this stuff work, whether you go to the DMV, whether you work in fast food restaurants, whether you have to take people's order, you have to take people's credit card information, if you have to, you are actually abiding by one of these frameworks or standards or laws, because it's the only way to protect information even a little bit. It's the only way to do it. Like whenever you use your credit card at a store, there's laws around that. It's called PCI DSS. And if you work in the fast food industry, you may have had to do special things to protect the register, the point of sale device. That means that you've done some level of security, be it physical security or personnel security. You have done some kind of security. You just don't know what it's called. You just don't know what you're doing. But if you were to list some of that on your resume, somebody's going to see it. So there's other ones. There's Sarbanes-Oxley for financial sector. There's the NIST CSF. There's international standards. There's all kinds of standards. You got to list those standards on your resume. There's country standards. There's city standards. The state of California has its own privacy standards. The EU has its own standards. Australia has its own. Canada has its own standards. Different industries. The hotel restaurant management industry has their own standards. You name it. If there's an industry, they have a bunch of laws that they've learned over decades and decades of doing business that they have to abide by in order to have clean food, safe work environments, fire safety, all of those things all tie together. And what you'll find is in those regulations, they talk about information technology. They talk about protection of sensitive information, such as PII, personally identifiable information. They talk about in the healthcare industry, you already know, like they're talking about patient health, patient protecting patient information and things like that. So one of the skills that we need to have is not only understanding those standards, practices, and regulations, but also how to apply them. And that's what you got to also list in your resume if you were interested in GRC. Another thing is basic understanding of information technology. That becomes very important because sometimes the job description that we have doing compliance, it includes doing things like vulnerability assessments. It includes things like scan analysis. It might include some more technical side of the house. There are some GRC positions that are not technical at all, that those do exist. But if you are trying to venture into the more technical aspects, you will have to have some basic understanding of information technology. How do computers work? Hell, what is a computer? What is the difference between a client and a server? How do they work together? Networking, basic networking, networking skills. So those are the basic things that you'll have to know. And there's a few other ones when I'm not going to get into it. But you've got to have a basic core understanding of information technology in order to know how to protect the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of an organization's assets. Another skill would be, would depend on the job. So like I said, in certain GRC positions, I've had to be way more technical, where I'm actually applying the security controls on a system. I'm actually working with server technology. I'm actually helping the incident response team handle malware or whatever. But there's been some where I'm just in the background writing policy, and that's all I do, and I don't put hands on any computers. So there's gonna come, sometimes you're gonna have specializations in those jobs that they require. And sometimes what's cool is sometimes you'll get in there and they'll teach you on the job. Like they just want you to come in with the standards and frameworks and laws and basic IT, and then they'll teach you other technologies. That's happened to me several times. Actually, every single time, there's always some technology that I'll learn it on the job. Like they'll say, okay, here's this new system we have. It's called Archer. We're going to go ahead and teach you, like, here's how you do it. Here, they'll walk me through how to do it, and then I'll know how to do it, you know, after that. Tools. There's a few tools that I've been exposed to that on a regular basis you're going to get exposed to if you do GRC work. So one of them, and this is not, this one is greater than that one. I'm just going to kind of randomly list the ones that have been pretty consistent throughout my career. So GRC management tools. In this day and age, a lot of the documentation is being more and more is being done on some sort of data relational database, some kind of object-oriented database. What they start doing is putting these very expensive, massive, content management systems together. And I'll just name a few of them. One that you might have heard of, EMAS. Another one's called CSAM. One's called Xacta. There's a ServiceNow, I think, has some features that do GRC type work, Jira, and a bunch of tools that are out there that have some element of governance, risk, and compliance that I've been exposed to at my current job, and then at some of my past jobs have the same kind of tools. They're called different things. There's one called Archer that can do many different things, from vulnerability management and helping to manage the documentation and store it properly and all that kind of stuff. But these governance tools are used more and more because they're just easier to deal with than just having a whole bunch of spreadsheets or a whole bunch of PDFs or a whole bunch of Word documents that hold your artifacts or whatever documentation that you need to validate the effectiveness of the security of your system. And it's also in the private sector as well, private and public sector, meaning government. The government does it, and also, you know, your Googles, your Amazons, all those guys do it too. So they have some sort of GRC tool. Sometimes they're homegrown, like they'll make their own internally based off their own. They'll take a database and from scratch make their own. And sometimes those are even better than the ones that are out there on the market. So another one besides the GRC management tools would be VM scanners, vulnerability scanners, or compliance scanners. So you might get exposure to these. Like I said, it depends on the job. But from the last, and this just might be because of my skill set, the last 4 or 5 jobs I've had to have some sort of understanding of vulnerability management, either running the tools myself or understanding the results from those tools, being able to interpret them and work with those with the data that comes out of them. But the types of vulnerability management scanners, just to give you a few, would be like Qualys, Nexpose, OpenVast, Rapid7, and there's many, many other ones on the market that are way more popular than the ones I just named. But just understanding how vulnerability management scanners work and then being able to work with the data that comes out of them and understanding how what's going on with them is really going to help you out. Seeing technology. Now, this is another one that it depends on the job, but a lot of times I've had to either look at logs or had to help to turn on the logs on a system. What are logs? Like that's the mechanism on the servers and the workstations that will capture what's going on to allow the organization to continuously monitor what's the status of the system on a real time, near real time basis. And so one of the technologies that you might have to you get exposure to is called a SIEM. And so a SIEM is a Security Information Event Manager. And an example of that would be QDAR from, I think, IBM, and then ArcSight, which I don't even know who owns them anymore. But those are just two different ones. And all these tools do is this one central repository where all the logs go to, and then people, it allows, it actually does a few different things. It allows, if there's an incident, you can go back in the SIEM, look at all the logs and figure out, do forensics and figure out how this person got into the network or when this malware happened or whatever. Another thing that it allows us to do is that if there's an internal threat, you'd be able to go or some, not even a threat, like it could be something like somebody mismanaged something or something was misconfigured. You can use the logs to go back in time to figure out when it stopped and why it stopped. So maintenance and then incident response and then threat intelligence. Like those are three different things that all are reliant on SIEM technology, continuous monitoring on all three fronts. Spreadsheets is another one that's not mentioned, but man, I'll tell you what, these organizations are absolutely addicted to spreadsheets. They cannot, I mean, we have artificial intelligence. We have SIEM technology. We have incredible tools and they still can't get away from spreadsheets. Like there's some of them even incorporate spreadsheets. And they just still use spreadsheets. So spreadsheets is still something you have to know. Like you still have to be able to use them. And the more you know how to use them, the better. So those are just some of the skills, tasks, and tools that you'll have to do, learn and know in GRC. And it doesn't matter like what industry you're in, what government you're in. These have been the same things that I've been using throughout the years. I've got some people jumping on here, so I'm going to go ahead and take some questions as usual. I'm not going to stay on here too long, guys, but let me see what we got going on here. Check some questions, see what's going on. And I had Instagram up, but I don't know what's happened with it. I'm not sure if it's still up or what's going on. So no questions, nothing going on there. So let me go to YouTube. Let me see. Beach Material says, does it make sense, in your opinion, to get certified in ISO 27001? I would say it depends on what you're trying to do. Any certification in frameworks is going to help you out on your resume, but some are going to help you better than others. Right now, the most popular that I've seen, the most popular specific framework or standard certification is going to be the CGRC, really known as IC2 squared. But usually organizations will take other, and that one doesn't focus on ISO 27001. It focuses entirely right now. It might change in the future, I don't know. But right now, it focuses entirely on the NIST 800. NIST Risk Management Framework, to be exact. But is it worth your time to do ISO 27001 certification? Like as in you have a cert that says, hey, I know ISO 27001. Hell yeah. And the reason why I say that is because ISO 27001, NIST 800, NIST CSF are the most popular certifications. I found that just listing one of those standards or frameworks just putting one of those on my resume opens up the doors to other things like PCI DSS. I've gotten calls for HIPAA. I've gotten calls for other standards because I know those ones. They figure, I think it's because ISO 27001 is so robust that they know if you know this one, you probably could pick up the other ones really fast. And that's the truth. That's actually the truth. And it's the same thing with NIST 800. If I list NIST 800, people call me ISO 27001 and vice versa. Because they know if you know this one, you probably pick this other one up very, very quickly. And a lot of times, if you've been exposed to this one, you've been exposed to the other one too in an organizational environment. So yes, I would have to know the name of the certification you're talking about. But if you tell me the name of it, I'll be able to give you some idea of the popularity of it. I think ISOCA has an ISO 27001, and that's a great organization to get certification from. So that's some place you might want to try out ISOCA. All right, let me see if I got some stuff on TikTok here. Questions on TikTok before they close TikTok down in the U.S. I graduated in May with an information technology and CompTIA trifecta. CompTIA trifecta, okay. How can I get a SOC analyst gig? So mostly I'm just gonna keep it real with you. Mostly people are looking for experience. A lot of folks are getting, I'm not telling you don't get a certification. I'm not telling you to don't get a degree. I'm a huge advocate for both of those things. But what they're really gonna look for is experience. That said, you could still get your foot in the door, but I would say you might wanna look for, there's a few things you can do. Look for something local. There might be something local. It's not gonna be a SOC analyst job, okay? But you wanna get your foot in the door with a basic information technology field tech job, right? Just all you're trying to do is get something on your resume that I have experience working for an organization, right? Even if you do some freelance work, whatever, you need to get something on your resume to show that you are a worker. You've been in this field. You're not a window shopper. You know, you're here to stay. So you've got to show some experience. Now, if you happen to still be in school, I would start right now in internships and apprenticeships. And that's another thing you can do. With a degree, you're more likely to get an internship or an apprenticeship. Now, as a student, that would be best, but I would also try it if you have a degree altogether. So that's two different ones. Another thing you can do is go overseas. And this is not a popular opinion. It's not popular, you know, it's not for everybody, especially if you have family, you have kids, whatever. But you can go overseas. Really? Really? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me? Let me pause for a second. Are you guys having trouble with my, can you guys hear me? Test. Excel won't go away. Yes. Okay. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate you. Okay. Somebody said they can hear me. All right. So where was I? Okay. A SOC analyst. Somebody said that they want to get a SOC analyst gig. So overseas, they're looking for SOC analysts. Like my first SOC analyst job was overseas. I got a contract and I didn't have previous SOC analyst experience, but I did have IT experience. All right. So you could go overseas and get a job as a SOC. Now they're going to do an extensive background check. You're more likely to be working for some gigantic organization. But if you can get through the background check and everything, they will fly you on their money. They'll fly you there. They'll keep you in a place there. You have a contract of like 6 months to a year. And then that is going to be some solid experience for you. You'll be a contractor overseas, and they're going to pay the hell out of you. It's not going to be, you know, the same. It's not. It depends on the country. It depends on what country you go to. And there's actually some countries that'll hire you. I know like Saudi Aramco's been hiring people. That's in Saudi. You'll be living in Saudi Arabia. And they'll pay you to go there. they'll pay for you to live there on site or whatever. But yeah, it's not going to be, you're going to be in another country. So that's one thing. Another thing you can do. Another one is even more less popular would be the going to the military, because you probably get some get ass experience there. So those are some options for you. It's not going to be easy. It's not, everybody got to pay their dues in this field. This is not, there's a high curve and a high tax to getting in this field. The tax is experience, finding experience and doing it. Where can one get GRC internships? GRC internships, I would say probably would be, government work. You could probably find some, especially if you're working on your degree if you're in college right now and you're looking for a job there, you could probably get an internship with the government. That said, the government has a bunch of internships, not just necessarily GRC work, but as a computer, they're always looking for computer IT security people. So, or cybersecurity people. I would look directly on the sites like usajobs.com. USA Jobs, I don't know if they have internships, but let me see. They might have some internships. USA Jobs internships. Before I lie to you about anything, federal internships portal. Yeah, USA Jobs. I don't know how the hell I knew this. But yeah, they have a federal internship. You know why? It's because they're always messaging me. They're always sending me these messages about internships and apprenticeships and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, let me show my screen. If you happen to be watching me right now, and I'll describe it to all the people who listen. But if you just go to intern.usajobs.gov, you'll find a bunch of internships, not just IT related. Now, it's not necessarily GRC only. They've got nursing jobs here. They've got computer scientist, IT specialist. The IT specialist type jobs are the ones where you'll find the kind of work, I'm telling you about. Sometimes they don't name it GRC. They're not going to name it. No, not sometimes. They never name it GRC. Nobody calls it that in government. Nobody calls it GRC. They have all kinds of names for it, but they don't call it GRC. They call it information system security officer work, information system security managers, information. You call it cybersecurity risk analysts. You call it cyber security defenders. Sometimes do nursing type work. Those are some of the words in the government that they'll use. And outside of that, they might use GRC terms for jobs, but. Will AI take over software engineering? I personally don't think it will. I think that what will happen is that more software engineers will get smart and start using AI, and probably the skill set will shift to where software engineers don't have to know. The skill set of a software engineer, I think, will shift. This is just my take on it. I could be completely wrong about this. But I think what will happen is you'll still have to have software engineers, but what will happen is their tools will change. They'll start using artificial intelligence and things like some kind of Copilot variant, some kind of Claude 3, GPT-8 variant, Genesis, Bard, something like that, where it'll be a tool set where the AI references the libraries that are used, and then they'll use that. So they probably won't be as smart on the language. They'll get smart when you use AI to develop the software. That's what I think will happen over the next 10 years. Will there be a point where an AI can just write everything? you still have to have somebody to generate the requirements. I mean, I think people are panicking for good reason for the with the LLM models and stuff. And I get it, but I think that it's kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember this. I'm pretty old. Okay. So I just remember like in the coming out of the between the 80s and 90s, early 90s, there was a time when programmers had to know something called assembly. Some programmers had to know like I don't know if you've ever seen assembly, but it's like ones and zeros. It's machine language. And some programmers, they had to have some programmers. I mean, you had Fortrans and COBOL and some other old ass languages, basic, some old ass languages people. And they're much easier to understand because they're written for humans. It's a language written for us to understand, for our brain to comprehend how the logic works. But underneath all of that is just straight up ones and zeros. And there was in the 90s, early 90s into early now, let's just say 90s, right? In the 90s, I can't speak too much on the 80s, but there was some 80s code that 90s people had to deal with. And some of that was written in ones and zeros in a language called assembly. So there's not too many people who know that language anymore. Straight up machine code. Ones and zeros, and not many people that have to mess with that language anymore because we have modern languages, we have modern programming languages where you just don't have to know that anymore. It's just not necessary to know how ones and zeros to move the mouse around. And actually, it's too much information for us to. It's like trying to draw with ASCII code. Like, why make it harder? And then. And also, the systems that we're using are so much more complex that you can't even, a human brain can't process enough information to write an assembly to do a 3D modeling program or something like that. It's just not even like, we're not capable of that. So I think what's happening is the technology is growing four-dimensionally, right? And we need a machine like an AI to be able to keep up with that. It's terrifying that the scale is exponential because we can't really, it's hard for us to understand how quickly things are going. We don't fully understand it. So it's an amazing time to be alive. It's terrifying, but it's actually amazing. It's like we're living in a real, it's like we're in all those science fiction books I read. It feels like that. It's an amazing time to be alive. I mean, I think about it. Like, the internet started blowing up around the 90s, World Wide Web, right? And then we're alive for social media to take over human brains. And then algorithms, and very quickly AI. And all of that in one lifetime. We're alive during this time when humanity is about to shift permanently to another species. It's terrifying, but it's also exciting. It's amazing to see it. And hopefully we do something good with it. But I think we'll do something very bad and very good with it, just like everything we use, like from nuclear power to electricity to fire and to metal. Like every technology humans have come up with in the development of this species, we use it for good, bad, and ugly. And I think the AI will be the same. We'll use it for good, bad, and ugly. Will it remove all jobs? I don't think it'll be all jobs, but it'll be a lot. It'll shift all of us. Like, we'll start to shift. We'll rely on it just like our phone. We'll rely on it a lot more than before. So more and more relying on it, and it's changing the way we think, the way we do business, and the way we do everything. It's just my take on it. You know, I don't know anything. I'm not some kind of scholar or anything. I just I'm just a regular ass worker, man. I'm just a regular ass dude. But that's just my take on it. Mel Cobb says, definitely a lot of emails we use HITRUST. This is, he's speaking on risk register. He's speaking on what I was talking about in the beginning of one of the things that we have to do as ERC people is a lot of communication. It's a really, really big part of our job. And Mel Cobb is mentioning a lot of emails. Absolutely. I literally have thousands and thousands of emails. And he's saying we use HITRUST, which is, I think, healthcare information technology security process to make sure that healthcare facilities are protected. Correct me if I'm wrong. Risk register is another thing that they use. I think risk register is it's a GRC tool for documentation and artifacts and things like that. So that's another one. I didn't mention that one, but I think that's what it is. Please correct me. I'm not an expert in every field, so I don't know. Like, some of these tools I kind of offhandly heard about or had very little exposure to. All right. William Draper says, looking forward to your ISO 27001 book. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm coming soon. Coming soon, real soon. I can show you guys a glimpse of it. I'm on like the third iteration of this book. And, thanks, Lisa, for helping me out with this. Lisa helped to look at some of the wording on this thing and gave me some hints on. That's why I got some pictures in here and a little bit more of my own personal perspective in there. So thanks, Lisa, for that. So yeah, here's the book right here. And what I want to do is break it down. I want to break it down as simplest form here. And what I'm showing on the screen, if you happen to be listening to me, some of the diagrams and infographics that I put together to show how it works and focusing in on the things that we need to know, we being information technology people who are doing this stuff, we people who have hands on. So here's a real good breakdown of ISO 27001. They break it down by clauses. You have a clause, the main ones that you need to watch is going to be clause 4 through 10. And in this infographic, I've got clause 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And I show how these are used, how these are lined up with the controls. ISO 27000 family has its own set of security controls. And so each one of the clauses lines up with those controls, with some of those controls. And then also it lines up with something called the Plan, Do, Check, Act, which is a method of conducting business, a method of getting things done and checking your work as you go. So that's ISO 27001 in a nutshell. One thing that I didn't mention in that particular, in that diagram is the clause 4 and 5, which is the context. Clause 4 is the context of the organization. The organization needs to know their business. They need to mind their business, meaning they need to understand their industry. They need to understand what they're doing. And then clause 5 is leadership. Leadership needs to be on board with it. Doesn't this all make sense? If you happen to be an IT person, especially in cybersecurity, it absolutely makes sense. You cannot do this work. We cannot do our job without the leadership fully signed on with what's going on. So this ISO 27001 makes sure from the get-go that leadership is involved from the beginning. It's a requirement. So right in the middle of this diagram, I put lead, clause 5, leadership, real, real important. And then it goes to the plan, the do, the check, the act. And that's ISO 27001. And all this book does is in a very simple fashion goes through, like, here's the plan, the do, the check, the act, and here's what you're doing with each clause. And I'm thinking about doing another book where what I do is give you actual templates and documents of how to do it. Like, here's the document of how you do the equivalent of a system security plan with this. So that book's coming soon. I'm still working on it. And you'll stay tuned for that probably out in the next 30 days. Right now it's getting formatted and getting the cover done and everything. So thanks for asking about that. Oh, Larry, man, thanks for that $20, man. I appreciate you. He says, don't rule out working for the federal government. I work as an I work IT project management for the government and recently had my first GRC-related project come across my desk. The government is actively looking for IT cyber talent. Yeah, all the time. It always blows my mind when people are talking about how many layoffs there are. And I'm not saying they're not, but a lot of those are happening in the private sector, who are very much dependent on stocks and stuff. They really are dependent on market forces more so than government. I'm not saying government is not dependent on market forces. Their money source comes from somewhere else, comes from your tax dollars. So it's a little bit different. So federal government is always looking for talent. They're really looking for people. The thing is, there's a huge learning curve and an experience curve with it. And that's where I'm seeing a big disconnect, especially with the younger folks who are trying to get in this field and they're trying to get that stable money. They're seeing influencers like myself talking about this and saying, man, I have no problem getting jobs. I have no problem getting jobs. And then they're saying, man, like, and how much are you getting paid? And I'm telling them, and they're like, damn, okay, how can I get in? And then the government's like, hey, we need people. There's this big gap between getting in the door and then people who are coming straight out of college to get there. But the thing is, it's there. I was showing before, like, there's these internship portals. USA Jobs has a federal internship portal. You might have to. Sometimes it's not going to be in your state, right? It's not going to all immediately be work from home or something like that. It's just the way they do it in the government. But they, like Larry said, they are definitely looking for people all the time. Different contracting organizations are looking to hire people to get in these jobs for the government. And old folks like myself are getting out. Like, I'm on my way out of this work, you know, like, I'm looking on the horizon saying, I'm out of here. Like, I don't want to do this. Even some of my coworkers are like, you know, I'm kind of done, you know, like, we've just been doing it long. It's not that it's bad. It's just, it's been a long time, you know, it's just been a really long time. So, and the boomers are already gone. Like, our parents are just starting to retire and get out of this work. So now there's a huge gap of people that we need to fill these roles. So, yeah, there's a huge demand for it. Let me see. Junior on TikTok says, is it possible to get an entry-level job with just a Google certification? I also have a degree in computer science. So I don't know. I don't have experience with the Google certification. I would recommend something more marketable like the Security Plus. And I'm not saying that Google certs are not good. I know that they're a cheaper alternative, and there might be some private organizations that highly regard them. But I'm just saying, if you go to Indeed.com, search for Google certification, Google IT support, I think it's called certification, you won't find many people looking for it. It's just a fact. Like, you just go to Indeed and type it in. But if you look up Security Plus, you will find lots of people looking for that particular certification. And if you look up even A-plus certification, which is a basic help desk certification, you'll find people looking for that certification. Even, hell, Network Plus, they'll be looking for that one too. CompTIA is well-regarded, and lots of organizations are looking for it. And that's not to say that people are not – nobody's looking for the Google cert. I'm just saying it's just got here, right? It's just on scene, like, in the last 3-4 years. So people just don't know about it. Google's not very good at marketing some of their other tools and certifications. They're not in the business of doing that. They just put stuff out there. They make cool stuff and then put it out there and then wait for people to show up, you know. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. So this is my 2 cents on it. I would highly recommend a CompTIA certification. Because it's just more people know about it. one of my friends, my mentor, real smart dude. He was talking shit about the CEH. And I get it. He got the CEH. He said it wasn't useful. But I'm telling you, people are looking for it. So it's my point is that people might talk crap about certain certifications, or they might talk crap about degrees and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, and they have a point, but the market doesn't lie. Like, people want, if they're looking for a certain thing, then that's what they're looking for. And it's either you're going to supply it or somebody else is going to supply it to them. So you've got to, in some level, adhere to the market forces. Like, there are people are looking for a certain thing. And what we do here in this capitalistic society is supply and demand. What I'm telling you to do is supply the demand. Like, you be the supplier. You be the pusher. You be the supplier by getting that certification. And I would recommend, like I said, if you want to get the Google certification, go for it, right? But I'm telling you, the CompTIA A+, the CompTIA Security Plus, and even Network Plus is better market-wise, what people are looking for in the Google certificate. That Google, it depends on which one. I mean, I'm sure there's some really good ones, but probably a cloud one is dope. Like, I had worked with some coworkers who had the Google Cloud certification, that high-level one, and that one's good. But if you're an entry-level, CompTIA, right, to get you in the door. Like, those ones are going to be, people are going to know, at least know what it is. So I'm not saying no, I'm just saying there might be a better alternative for you. What's a good entry-level cert to get? I already answered that. With some hands-on experience with Splunk and Python. Yeah, you're on the right track. That's great. Yeah, definitely put that on your resume, man. Yep, that right there, that hands-on experience is going to get you pretty far. I was thinking A+ certification, yes. Yep. Will AI take over software engineering? I already answered that one. I think a lot of influencers are kind of like pumping up AI large language models to, like, I don't know if you guys knew this, but the best content is always negative. The stuff that people watch is negative. And that's all, it's just human nature. I don't know why we do that. Like, when we're doom scrolling on TikTok or whatever, we just, for whatever, it's kind of like a train wreck. You know, you don't want people to perish. I mean, most of us don't, but we're driving by. You want to look and see what's going on or whatever. We're just curious like that, especially negative things. So a lot of influencers, it's a psychological thing. They're taking advantage of that psychological hack that's there, and they focus on the evil, the bad part of whatever industry they're in. And in ours, AI, like, all AI is gonna take over the world, it's gonna kill everybody, it's gonna destroy everything, you know, or whatever, right? But I don't think it's 100% bad, personally. I don't think it's 100% bad. I would say that probably the thing that's looming is it will change us. Just like phones did. I mean, this right here is a doomsday weapon right here. This thing has changed us. Like, we are different. We're not the same animals we were before because of this phone, because of social media, and because of this. And I think AI will do the same thing or more than what phones and social media have done to us. And it would be really smart for us, and very, really mature and wise for us to take a lesson from what social media is doing, continues to do to us, and apply that to artificial intelligence and how that's going to change us. Maybe we just say, except, hey, this will change us, but maybe it can change us for something better. Like, maybe we can be better, you know, with this. How? Like, let's be creative and come up with a way that we can use it for our advantage instead of destroying ourselves or our kids. Maybe there's something we can do to help us out here, you know. So I don't have the answers. I'm just some guy. Let me see. Let me see. I got some more questions, comments here. I've been talking for about an hour. Let me try to do a speed run through these and see if I can answer some questions. Okay, somebody said introvert here. GRC is not for me. Don't like talking to people, so I'm going to need to get real technical if I want to get into cybersecurity. And the thing is, more tech web, I'm also very introverted. I'm one of the most introverted people I've ever encountered. There's not many people who are more introverted than me. I know it doesn't seem like, because I've been doing this. You know why I do this? I forced myself to do it over and over again. It was like throwing cold water on myself over and over again. So now it's just like I can do it like I'm breathing. And it's the same thing with meetings. Same thing. Like I just force myself to do it and over until I'm just good at it, you know, or I'm passable. So as an introvert, like don't paint yourself into a corner, especially if there's opportunities ahead of you. That said, you know, if you feel like you would do better configuring firewalls on a closet, go for it. It's there. There's plenty of opportunity to do that. But don't paint yourself in the corner. And that goes for the extroverts too. Like, don't label yourself and then be like, well, I can't do that. And push yourself. Try to go to push yourself to the next level. And challenge yourself to do something that you're not comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with doing this. I'm not comfortable with meetings. I'm not comfortable talking to people. It's every time I do it, it's gotten easier. Like the first time I did it, I froze up. First time I did it, I was in the military and I froze. Like they made us do it. I was a cop in the military. I was security police, and they were just. We had to do this post briefing in front of like a colonel or a general would come. And here I am, just got into the military, and I'm supposed to do this briefing in front of this colonel. And what they would do, what our flight chief would do, is just make us do it over and over and over and over and over again until we can do it in front of anybody. And then one of the things he would have us do is he would have all of us be on a stage in front of a group of our peers and come in there and do our post briefing. Right in front of everybody, in front of our peers, in front of all of them would be there like an audience. And then he'd make you go in front of everyone and then give your post briefing. And the first time I did it, I froze and absolutely hated it. It was a nightmare. And I froze and then they laughed at me. They laughed me off the face of the earth. And I went down, sat down and I did not cry. So you just got to push yourself to do different things. You got to push yourself, to do areas and do things and that you wouldn't normally do. And you're going to fall on your face. You're going to fail. It's not always going to go like you want it to go, but then you know what you do when you fail, you get up, do it again. You do it again and again and again and again. It's just like driving. It's just like riding a horse. It's just like riding a bike. It's like anything in life. You just do it over and over and over and over until it's just like breathing. And that's how meetings have gotten for me. Is that I don't like, I still don't like doing meetings. But if I do it, I have it's like a rhythm. And once I get that rhythm going, it's no problem. What link can I get a sample of your resume? Combocourses.net. Combocourses.net, where you can get combocourses.com, of course. And if you happen to be, the link should be in the description or in my profile. Go there and it's there, it's for free. If you don't want to be on the newsletter, you can just, there's a place where you can you can unsubscribe after you get your hands on my resume. So you're the person who creates Stigs. I've been the person who created Stigs. No. I don't create the Stigs. The Stigs are good. Okay, let me back up. Stigs means Security Technical Implementation Guides and is created by the Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of Defense makes those. I give them out publicly, and it's a breakdown of all the security features that you're supposed to have on Windows 11, Windows 19, Windows 2022, Office 365. They have one for all the major, most of the major applications and most of the major operating systems, including Linux and Mac, Macintosh, and all that stuff. So that's what a Stig is. It's input how to put the security features on these different applications and OSs that we use. Do I create them? No, they're created by DISA and the Department of Defense. What I used to do is I would help implement them. I would take the implementation guide and we would go through a server or we'd go through a workstation and implement them and then make sure that the system still worked. So I don't do that in my current job. I'm part of the process of making sure that it's implemented correctly, but I'm not the person implementing it. But I know what they are, I've had exposure to them, and I've done it before. Always wondered what Qualys does. So Qualys is a scan and vulnerability compliance scanner, kind of like Tenable or Rapid7 or some of the other. There's a whole bunch of them out there. OpenVAST, there's a whole hundreds and hundreds of these out there. And if you include the open source ones and the really small organizations who create their own, there's thousands, maybe millions of them out there. Qualys happens to be one of the top ones. The top ones probably be Tenable, Qualys, and then Nexpose. And then there's a few other ones out there. I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of them. But those are the Qualys is pretty big. Very expensive too. And then he says, is Splunk also a scene? Yeah. Yep. Splunk is one of the, I think right now, Splunk is the main dog. It's the big dog on the block. It's probably the biggest one right now. Used by all kinds of major organizations. And then what is ISO 27001 lead implementer? Implementer? What is a lead implementer? It sounds like what I do, but for ISO 20. So what I'm doing, and I could be wrong, I don't know, but it sounds like, and I don't want to hold it, you know, I don't want to lie to you and guess. Let me see. I would say while I'm typing here, that it sounds like the guys who are implementing the security features on a system in accordance with ISO 27001. That's what it sounds like. And that's kind of what I'm part of a team that does it. But lead implementer, I'm looking it up as I'm talking to you. Let me see. The lead implementer, ISO 27001 implementer training course enables participants to acquire knowledge necessary to support an organization's effective planning, implementation, management, monitoring, and maintenance of the information security management system. Yeah, so that's what I do. This, what they said, is what I do, but for NIST 800. So a lead implementer does, they maintain security posture of a system in accordance with ISO 27000 ISO 27001, and to make sure that the information and security management system is up to speed. How do you break into a GRC after CYSA? Actually, that's a really good off-ramp into GRC because CYSA is going to be your implement. They're going to be your SOC analyst type. So if you're a SOC analyst type person, a person, you're going to have exposure to incident response. You're going to have exposure to, you're going to have to know something about networking, computers, all your basic IT stuff is taken care of. So I don't have to tell you that. You're going to have to know a lot of security features that are supposed to be on the system, because you're going to get exposure to vulnerabilities that might be on the network. You're going to get exposure to all kinds of security features that are supposed to be done by the organization. And so that exposure to the security best practices is going to be key to building your profile. And what you're going to want to focus on, though, that here's something that the CYSA people, the SOC analysts and the cybersecurity analysts of the world don't focus on, and it's going to be your standards and your frameworks. That's your NIST 800, your ISO 27001, writing policies, writing procedures. Those are the things you want to put on your resume, or have some kind of experience with. And as a CYSA gut person, if you're a SOC analyst, you might have exposure. You might have to write a procedure. I know I did when I was a SOC analyst. There were some procedures I would have to write so that other junior SOC analysts, when they came in, I would give them, here's what you need to do. Here's a breakdown. Here's some cheat sheets. I would write them for them, like work instruction. I would give them to them. And then sometimes, there was a couple times when they reached out, when the actual GRC people reached out to us and said, hey, could you explain the security features of this tool, this ArcSight tool you guys are using? We need a little bit more information. So I could be a part of helping them to develop the system security plan. So that's those kinds of things that you would sleep on as an IT professional that you want to be a part of if you're trying to transition into GRC stuff. So, let me see if I can grab more great questions off here before I get off of here. I've been talking for about 1 hour, and I got to go real soon. Let me see here. Okay, so Mike says, under the government leadership, there are a lot less jobs, and because corporations are getting hit and stocks are lower, and they're hiring, and there's hiring freezes. Well, I could tell you this, like where I'm at right now, we don't have enough people doing this work. And they're always talking about, oh, we're going to hire this person, we're going to hire that person and stuff. And it was the same thing at the last couple places I worked. I'm just noticing a trend. I'm just noticing a trend. Everywhere I go, we don't have enough people to do the work. I'm just being completely, I have nothing to gain by lying to you. So right now, we definitely don't have enough people doing this work. Not on my side, doing IT stuff. Security stuff, and not on the IT guys who implement it. We just don't have enough people doing it. And then in my last job, they were always looking for people. And then the job before that at NASA, it was the same thing. And I can go all the way back 10 years, and it's been the same thing. We don't have enough people to do the work. And then because of that, they'll have me do two or three people's job. And There's really a huge problem going on. I'm just telling you from personal experience for the last 10 years, there's not enough people doing the work. Now, why? The natural question is, why aren't they hiring people? Like, what is going on? One of the reasons is they can't find, in the government where I'm currently working, one of the issues that we're having without giving too much away, they can't, as soon as the person finds out how long it takes to get in the job, they bounce. And that is a problem, because I almost bounced. I almost left. Like, it took so long to get the job that after a while, I'm talking months. So after a while, I'm like, dude, this is not worth my time. Like, meantime, in the meanwhile, I don't have a job and you guys are messing around. And it's like, this process is taking too long. And even when I got the job, it still took more months for them to process my background. Now, keep in mind, I've had a top secret clearance. I've had a secret clearance. I've had all these clearances. These guys are going to take 5 months to go through. So we can't even get people in, because as soon as they hire a person, it takes too long to get them in, and then they quit. Like, before they even get in the door, they've got the offer letter, and then it takes months to get them in, and then they're like, you know what, I'm done. I found another position. I'm out. And that's been happening place I'm at. That's a problem, I think, for some other organizations as well. It's just a really long process of a lot of red tape, a lot of hoops to jump through, a lot of process, too much, I think. And something's going on with that. But there was an article I just seen about jobs. Government, it was about government jobs and how they're looking for people right now. They're looking for people right now. Let me see if I can find it. I'm telling you, it was like the last couple of days. Government job interest spiked due to stability. Nope, that wasn't. What was it? It was about the government spending money to find more people to do the work. What was it called? Because they're really having a problem getting people in. And I think it might be a couple things. Like, the process of getting people in is too hard. It might be that they don't pay as much as the private sector pays. Like, Google might pay you twice as much as you would make with the government, or three, four times as much, or something crazy. So I think there's a couple of issues. I'm still looking for the gap. Cybersecurity talent gap. This was in October 2023. House passes a stopgap bill for government shutdown. No, that's not what I want. There's a huge push to try to get more people in here in this field. And they're looking for more people. But the narrative that you hear online is, there's less jobs, there's an economic collapse, nobody can find work. And I'm just saying, the work is out there, man. It's here, it exists. I think that the people who can get it, maybe they're just not interested in work. Maybe they don't want the commute. I think that there's more going on than just an economic collapse. Like these narratives are crazy. Like, they're always black and white, and they're always like black and white. Like, all women want this and all men want this, and the government is gonna, you know, it's always black and white. And that's how you know it's not necessarily a lie, but there's more to it than that. And I think that that's the same thing with this, is where they're saying, there's no jobs and the government's going to collapse and the economy is going down and everything. It's more to it. I'm just telling you, I've been working this job for many years, and we really need more people to do this work. We really do. And all the boomers are leaving, man. I'm telling you, retiring, they're getting the hell out of here. And now there's even more of a need this work, for people to come in and do this work. And I feel like I'm the only person saying this. And like, am I crazy? I think, like, maybe I'm crazy. I don't know. I don't know anything, guys. I don't know. Maybe you're right, Mike. I don't know. Okay. Bruce, do you think the CEH certification from EC Council, what do you think of it? What do I think of it? Now, keep in mind, I don't have it, but what do I think of it? I can tell you, like, people I know who have it. I can give you some my take on that. And I've looked at the material, have a book on it. See, I thought about taking it a couple times, like seriously thought about it, even start studying it. Anyway, this question goes on to say, and another question, projects and important are important for your portfolio? If so, what kinds of projects should you include? Okay, first question about EC Council's CEH. I think it's a marketable certification. I'm not a pen tester. I'm not an ethical hacker in any way, shape, or form. Have I messed around with it? Yes, it's fun. It's interesting. I have to know some stuff about ethical hacking, but you know, red teaming and blue teaming stuff and pen testing and stuff like that. I have to know a little bit about it, but it's just not my wheelhouse. It's not what I do personally. So I can't off the top of my head tell you about attack frameworks. I can't off the top of my head break down incident response and how that works. I cannot, not without some notes. You know what I mean? Like this stuff I'm telling you, like risk management framework stuff, it's most of it. I have no notes. I haven't come on here, nope, unprepared and just off the top of my, I just been doing it a long time. I can't do that with pen testing. I can't. So that said, I have studied and sat for lab. I went to like a what do you call them? A boot camp where they were trying to get us prepared for some pen testing certification many years ago. And I've had to stay like smart on some of this stuff. And I gotta say, I like the material in CEH. It's interesting. I like how they introduce you to all the tools and stuff. It's kind of cool. But I can see how a real hackers and the guys who are really doing this on a day-to-day basis, like the guys who are really needs on pen testing, they look down on the certification. They don't respect the certification. And if they have it, they would not tell other people they have it. And it's the reason why is because it's not respected among hackers. And if you, it's really not respected among hackers. What I'll say, they shit on it quite frequently. but as a marketable certification, I think is good. Like if you're trying to level up your career and you're an IT desk, you're a help desk guy or IT computer support tech, and you're trying to upgrade and you're trying to go that route. If you put that on your, you get that certification, people are going to notice it for you. Like at your level there, if that's where you're at, they will notice it. You know, somebody at a higher level, like who's already a hacker or whatever, maybe. I still think the industry will look at it. Like if that's your field, remember cybersecurity is a huge umbrella. Like for me, it's not going to do much for me personally because I'm not trying to be a pen tester. I'm not trying to go the assessment route. Like maybe if I was trying to be an SCA, an assessor, or if I was trying to do blue team, red team stuff, if I was trying to do pen testing as a like business or something, then maybe CEH would be good for me. But that's not what I do. So the jobs I normally go for are risk management framework, GRC type positions, information system security officer. Those are the kinds of jobs I'm doing. So for me, it wouldn't help me. But if you're trying to go that route as an assessor where you're trying to determine the effectiveness of controls that are in the DMZ or in the internally, and you have to know certain tools to how to scan and how to what tools to use to do that, then see if I help you out with getting hired. If you want to know deeper pen testing, you're going to have to go way beyond CEH. CEH has a couple of levels above it, so you might have to do that. you might have to do, there's one called OSCP. You might have to do something like that. Like if you want to go real hardcore, OSCP and Kali Linux, those certifications are where you want to go. I think that I've heard GPIN was pretty good. That's another pen testing certification if you're trying to go the pen testing route. Because even among the red teamer type folks, the attack guys, the ethical hackers, there's different branches. Like you've got quote unquote ethical hackers. You've got assessors. You've got straight up pen testers, and that's all they do is penetration testing on different environments, different networks. So there's different branches, and I'm not smart enough to speak on it, to be honest. But I do know that it's in that lane. There's separate lanes even in that. So will it help you? It depends on your level. Like if you're starting out, then yes, I would say so. If you're somebody like myself who's a GRC person, probably not much. There's probably other certifications you could do. Probably for me, CISA would help me a lot. I don't have that certification. That one will help me. CRS will probably help me out. If I wanted to go the analyst route or something like that, then the GCIA. If I wanted to go the pen testing route, maybe the CEH would help me. So it depends on where you're at to answer your question. Let me see. Looking through other people's comments. I work as IT technician at school. Once I get my Security Plus, what is the next step to get into GRC? I work is okay. Jordan, so what you want to do is start writing. Don't wait. So what you can do is start to add stuff to your resume right now. You said you're an IT technician at school and you have you're getting your Security Plus. So first of all, that's great. That's awesome. You've got the experience under your belt. You got the Security Plus, which is a great certification for GRC. That means you've already taken steps without even knowing that you're going to GRC. Because Security Plus is a good GRC certification. A lot of GRC organizations, a lot of compliance organizations look for Security Plus. What you want to do right now is if you get a chance, learn what framework your organization is using. So all the IT technician work you're doing, it's going to be based off of a policy. You guys have some policy of like, okay, if we get a vulnerability that's a high, we have to have it done in 3 days or whatever. You have a policy in place that tells you. So get familiar with the policy of the organization. If you can get involved with rewriting or updating, reviewing that policy, do that. Put it on your resume. If you can get involved with doing a procedure, if you're already doing procedures, put that on your resume because that's GRC type work. Documentation, technical documentation is kind of stuff that recruiters are going to be looking for. But another thing with the policy, once you read the policy, look at what they reference. Are they referencing FISMA? Are they referencing NIST 800? Are they referencing NIST CSF? Are they referencing ISO 27001? CIS, V8, PCI, DSS, whatever. Like, are they referencing any of those laws or regulations or anything? I doubt it would be FISMA, but because that's a federal compliance. But they might be referencing something, whether it's a state regulation or a federal mandate that all schools have to abide by. Whatever it is, learn what that is. And then put that on your resume. Because what we do as GRC people is we take high level standards and frameworks and high level regulations and we apply it to an organization. And that is our job. So if you can, you just need to prove that you can do that. And if you do that, that's right there is you're already doing GRC stuff. I can guarantee you, if you're an IT technician, you're already implementing the security controls. The security controls normally come from a body of recognized security controls in the industry, best practices. Learn what that is and put that on your resume. So right now is the time to start. Don't wait till after Security Plus is done. Right, do it right now. Help the security of the school policy. Help the develop the policy of your school. Develop the procedures. Look at the standards that they use, and make sure that stuff's on your resume. So hope that helps you. And I'm not going to answer too many more. Let me go all the way to the bottom here. Let me see here. I have 6 years in tech sales, and I want to get a CISA. Will ISACA allow me? I don't know the rules. I don't have an ISACA certification. I do know that they have some kind of requirements, some of their certs. And I don't know the certification. I'm going to look it up real quick. So you got to look at the requirements. And they might have – normally have a number of years you're supposed to have worked in a certain – domain of this certification, and you need to figure out what that is. So go to ISACA's main page and look up the it. See, and the thing is, maybe you can't get one, but there's other ones you can get. Like you might be able to get a C-Risk, and C-Risk is not bad. ISACA, just looking it up right now. CISA. Requirements, ISACA. And CISA, by the way, is a great certification. I don't have it, but some of my peers have it. My bosses have had it in the past. It's a damn good certification, very highly respected, and it's actually an intermediate level certification. Right up there, it's a professional level to intermediate certification, and I've thought about it several times, because it's definitely worth some real money. And I'm looking for it, and I am ISACA. Maybe because I spelled it wrong. No, I didn't spell it wrong. What the hell? Wow, they should really advertise their stuff better, man. This is a high level certification. And it's not coming up on the first page of Google at all. All right. Anyway, so what you want to do, I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have that certification. Go to ISACA's main page and look up the requirements for CISA. They normally have a requirement for being skilled or having some experience in that particular, the domains of the certification. So that's where you want to go with it. Oh, because I'm looking at news. That's why. Wow. Okay. Damn. Okay, here it is right here. CISA certification. Let me see if I can find the requirements. Looks like they're going to have me sign in to get the requirements of it. Yeah, I would definitely look into it, and then also look into the C-Risk as well, because that one's pretty good. Okay. Let me see if there's some questions I can answer. Can I get into certifications and unrelated degree? I'm a sophomore. Can I get into certifications and unrelated degree? That's what you mean. I'm a sophomore. What's your current degree, if you don't mind me asking? I could tell you this, Chris. So in the industry, if you're trying to get a job in this industry, what they're really looking for is not necessarily a cybersecurity or computer degree. I mean, that'd be ideal, and it was going to give you more networking with other people who are getting in this field, and internships and apprenticeships and stuff like this. So it opens up doors. If you actually an IT computer-based degree, but in the field, like where I'm working, like in IT, a lot of times if they're looking for a bachelor's degree or associate's degree, whatever, a lot of times they're looking for at least a STEM degree. So STEM would be science, technology, engineering, mathematics degree. Any one of those is what they're looking for. That said, if you have experiences overall, if you have experience in this, experience is above degree, experience is above certification. Now, I'm not telling you don't get one, a degree or a certification, because they're very, very, very valuable and very competitive, which is important. So that's good. But the experience is really what they're looking for. So if while you're in school, what I would recommend you do is see if you can help them to put images on computers, help on the campus in some way where you're already doing IT stuff before you can finish your degree. Even if it's online, they might have some stuff you can do on while you're online for the school that you can put it on your resume. The experience is really what you're trying to do. Like if you got to get the experience is worth its weight in gold. Like it's so important that even if I've worked, and I've told this story several times, I worked with several people who did not have any kind of technical degree. And I worked right alongside of them. They didn't have no technical degree. One guy had a degree in music. One guy had a degree in English or something. And he just happened to have experience doing IT work. So he was able to work, hand in hand with me. All right, guys, I got to get going with the next 10 minutes. I don't know if I could take any more long questions here. Somebody said, can you make six figures just starting out? No. Cannot. Just keeping 100% a buck with you. Six figures is not going to happen overnight. Is there a way you can do it pretty quick? You're going to have to take some great risks. Like going overseas and shit like that. You could probably do it that way. You got yourself a certification and then went overseas. You might be able to do it like that. Maybe. And that's, you probably get close to six figures. Thing is, it'd be untaxed. So you could get close to it that way, but without experience, just starting off really, no. Like six figures is it's going to take you some. Just keeping it real with you. it takes a minute to get there. Not to say you can't get it, and also it depends on where you live, what your skill set is. Like, anybody saying, "Oh, you're gonna make six figures immediately," it's not true, man. They're gonna make six figures off of you when you buy their course. That's what'll happen. what are some good questions to ask when conducting a kickoff meeting? Oh, man, depends on the kickoff meeting. Depends on the meeting that you're having. So if you're kicking off the meeting for a new system or something like that, oh, man, I got to get off this thing. You guys are going to have me talking past my time here. I got to get going. Thank you guys so much. Larry, thank you so much for that $20, man. I always appreciate it. Now I can give myself some more liquid death. Thanks, everybody, for watching. I hope this stuff helps you out a bit. I will talk to you guys next week. Peace.